You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world, and I want to thank you for joining us. I want to go over some topics that could be debatable. First, and the reason why I want to do this is because a lot of people have a lot of different viewpoints, and they may see something as one thing, and then the other party sees it as something else, and it just brings up interesting topics. And let's talk about crypto as geopolitical leverage. Now, you have nations that are using digital assets to bypass sanctions, and they're doing this consistently. You see this on exchanges, you see it on different platforms, and they're trying to reshape global settlement to avoid sanctions that are against them. And this is, the core debate proposition here is crypto. Could it be becoming a geopolitical instrument? Is that what we're seeing here, that allows states to bypass traditional financial choke points, weaken some sanction regimes, and build alternative settlement networks outside of Western control? Now, do I think this is happening? I think some of it does happen, but I think overall we're not seeing that. But I just want to touch on the topic, right, to give some pros and cons here, because it's interesting. What happens for sanctions, if something like this happens, sanctions lose their effectiveness pretty much. Digital assets, tokens, they provide parallel rails that reduce the reliance on SWIFT and other correspondent banking systems. Even though they are moving towards blockchain, that is more so on a centralized basis. So having and utilizing decentralized networks allow them to kind of move around a bit. Okay, you have alternative settlement architecture that could emerge, that is emerging. And that's basically blockchain-based cross-border payment systems that challenge the U.S. dollar dominance. We see this with stable coins emerging, whether they're on centralized exchanges or not. Centralized blockchains, or decentralized, or whatever the case may be, it brings something interesting to the table. Because, if the U.S. dollar is a dominant settlement instrument, does that mean that stable coins basically trump that? No, it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't is because you have a lot of the stable coins, they're priced in U.S. dollars. So U.S. dollars, and they're backed by treasuries and the like and other assets and digital assets and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day here, you have these stable coins that are denominated in crypto, that's denominated in U.S. dollars. Okay, and there's a reason for that, because there's a dominance effect there. Now you have these energy rich nations, they're looking to monetize surplus power. So basically, the mining becomes a geopolitical tool, right, for countries that have stranded or excess energy. They can tokenize it, they can put it on chain, they can utilize it the way they need to utilize it. These are things that are transpiring. You see a lot of real-world assets that are being tokenized, whether it be gold, silver, oil, whatever the case may be. And is this a good thing? Well, me personally, I think it is a good thing. As you start to democratize what is happening in the world, If you have a refinery that has gold, let's say, and you're tokenizing that, you're democratizing that. You're giving anyone in the world the ability to actually go and get involved with what you have. Same thing with oil and wheat and corn and other commodities and the like, you know, so that becomes something very interesting. Okay, when you have, you know, state issue tokens, you know, I'm not on board with centralized and state denominated tokenization, because what that does when you take a token that's issued by a government, you know, that means that the government can actually control everything. You know, they control your finances. They can shut it off whenever they want. They know what you buy, what you spend, everything else. When you know, even though you have a fiat currency right now that is, you know, for the most part digital, they don't track it unless you have it in a bank, right? If you have cash and you're using it for something, that's untraceable. You know, so when you have like in China, they have that. They have the centralized digital token, and that allows them to track, monitor, you know, pause, and basically freeze your account at will at the stroke of a key. You know, and that becomes problematic. You know, because state issued tokens, they create domestic liquidity, right? Outside of the IMF, however, and the World Bank influence, however, what does that do for the people? You know, that's the question that comes up. What happens there? Is government having too much control at that point? Probably. You know, and then you have the possibility of competing digital ecosystems. They're going to reshape alliances, trade flows, and so on and so forth. And this is where things get a little hairy, because you have a lot of things that are in motion that have countries in a tug of war. Now, some counter arguments, okay, could be that, you know, crypto rails are still, you know, surveilled. You know, you have chain analytics platforms. They make large-scale sanction evasion difficult. Basically, they're monitoring everything, and in the blockchain space, that is evident. You can't. It's hard to go and commit a crime utilizing a digital asset, utilizing blockchain. Now, could you try to commit a crime? Yeah, but it's gonna boomerang back at you at some point, because it's not traceable. Anything that's on a public blockchain is traceable. On a centralized blockchain, it's even more traceable, because they control it. They can put the brakes on at any given time. Okay, and the thing when you're talking about decentralization, in some cases, you know, you know, liquidity may be insufficient for major economies. So digital assets right now, for them to replace large-scale sovereign settlement, is not there yet. It will be there at some point once you have a general understanding. Because right now you have countries of different fiats. You had, you know, the European Union came together, they created the euro, and that's what they had there. Not everyone wanted to be a part of that. That's why you have certain countries like Switzerland, and they have their own currency still, because they didn't want to be a part of that. You know, so so until there is some medium there that could allow for these to interact the same way fiat, you know, is able to interact. And even with fiat, you know, that interaction can be limited, you know, where you're trading maybe on a commodities exchange or forex exchange, but if you're looking to go and switch dollars to something else, you have to go through a specialty outfit to do it. You know, because if you want to get the right pricing, right? Other than that, you know, you can actually take a nice loss in the spread from going from one currency to another. And, you know, sovereign tokens, you know, they can replicate existing power structures rather than disrupt them, because, as I said, when you have a central token Basically, the government is taking control of the people in that way. Okay, and that becomes something we don't want. That's like, you know, when you're going down the road of socialism, communism, that type of thing. And that's my view on it. You know, blockchain is supposed to be decentralized. You have blockchains that are centralized. Even when you look at what Circle's doing with that ARX system, that is going to be a centralized thing that's going to work amongst the banks, and that's why they're jumping on board. You know, but then again, you have Ethereum that is going and pushing for institutional adoption, and if they're combating it in that way, that keeps a lot of things decentralized. So, you know, more decentralization is better, in my opinion, but you also need centralized environments for other parts of the financial structure. And I've said this on this show many, many times, that there's not going to be one. You're not going to have DeFi over TradFi. You're going to have a combination, a convergence of TradFi and DeFi, because it is important for that to transpire, because you have financial markets that have been around for a long period of time. And that's something that's not going to go away. You know, so when you're talking about, you know, the on-chain analysis of blockchains, that is very helpful, because it allows for even if the authorities want to go and track something, there are public venues where they can do this. They can also integrate things within their system if they have the RPCs or APIs or whatever they have. They can actually track things, which makes it very interesting. Makes it really, really, really difficult for on a decentralized basis for fraud to take place, or evading sanctions to take place, because it will boomerang back. And that's what people, I think a lot of people don't understand that. You know, they think that they understand it, but they don't understand it. Because if you really understand, you know, how decentralization works, you'll understand that, you know, everything is traceable. On a centralized network, more so traceable. Just because someone, you know, goes and moves one thing somewhere else, you know, it's still a traceable event. However, you do have these blender situations that, you know, try to evade that, and you do have blockchains that do provide private transactions like Monero. And again, you know, all that stuff becomes interesting to talk about. Every blockchain has their strengths, has their weaknesses, but it all comes down to the greater good for the economy. The greater good, not just for the United States, but globally, the global economy. You know, where countries, if they embrace technology, they can actually go and elevate what's happening there. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you have companies and blockchains, you know, and the like, you know, they wind up being their own sovereign nations to a point. If you look at BlackRock, they are their own sovereign nation, pretty much. Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Apple, SpaceX, you know, this is, and Tesla, I mean, this is what's happening, okay, and that's what transpires. And when you are at that point, you know, you're insulated from the cannon. You're not cannon fodder anymore, right? You're insulated from, you know, a lot of things outside of that, and allows you to continue to grow. And I think that's what companies strive for. This is what blockchains strive for too. You know, you want to be able to elevate and create opportunities as much as you can in the space. And I think that is important. I also believe that, you know, when you're looking at tokenization of real world assets, there were a lot of arguments that were coming forth with that. Basically, you know, how can you trace something? How can you trace? How do you know for sure that the token is directly correlated with that asset, whether it be real estate, whether it be other things? You have platforms that allow for that to be locked up. I think that what needs to happen is that you're going to have more of legal things involved, because it has to be. You have to have some sort of legalese involved there. You know, maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say you're going to have virtual lawyers, but there has to be, you know, some law firm, something that is holding these assets, right? You know, if it's real estate, how do you prove it? If it's gold, how do you prove it? Now, with gold, you can prove it, you know, through a refinery or through a, if you have deposit slips with a bank or something, then you can actually do that. However, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that proof needs to be something that's evident. Doesn't mean that you're going, or any group is going and putting all the sensitive information on chain. No, they're putting a reference to it to the legal entity, whoever is holding it. And this is something that is moving forward on the Pico Novas blockchain. And I talk about this quite a bit because the Pico Novas blockchain itself has evolved, you know, from when it was launched about a decade ago to where it is right now, and what has happened with the blockchain over the past several months. You know, there has been a big overhaul that took place that added, you know, the ERC-20 and EVM compliance to the chain. The chain itself has its own standards that have heavy, you're talking about, you know, over 200 points, data points that are involved there. And there's more that is being integrated into the chain, amongst, you know, layers that are being built on top of it. But the infrastructure is not, it's not about bridging. It's about the infrastructure going on top of it. It's like, you know, taking one brick on top of another and that type of thing. And that's going to allow for institutions to actually go and handle that themselves, where they're going to be able to issue, they're going to be able to tokenize real world assets and provide that proof to a legal entity just via a reference that they would have to whatever legal entity is actually holding it. And I think that brings a lot of transparency. And again, you're talking about a convergence of TradFi and DeFi. You're not going to have one becoming the king of it all, because that's not a possibility. But understanding how everything works is critically important. I think that those that don't have the knowledge or don't understand exactly how things work, they'll get things misconstrued, right? You know, and that's where, you know, confusion comes into play. You know, and I like the fact that you have every, you know, from Solana to Ethereum to all, you know, from, again, Pico Novas to other Avalanche, you have the blockchains and Hyperliquid. They're going and they're providing enhancements in blockchain. They're doing that. They're providing, you know, everything from lending protocols and the like. And it's not something that happens in a second. It's not something that happens in a second at all. It takes time. But the great thing about it, you know, with technology, it's constantly evolving. You know, I think you have some people, you know, they have the impression that something happens in a heartbeat. When blockchains are being developed, there's a heavy, heavy amount of development that goes into them, right? And then aside from that, what is being integrated as layers on top of it. I'm not talking about layer two. I'm talking about layers that are allowing layer two platforms to actually function better with more transparency. And that's part of the key that I see going forward with the convergence of TradFi and DeFi. And that's something that, you know, with Pico Novas, that's something that's why we like it. That's something that has been occurring, and more so since late 2025, and definitely more so over the past few months. And I look forward to seeing what's going to happen there, because with this debate in regards to what is happening in the in the TradFi and DeFi space and sanctions and all this other stuff. The one thing that I can say, you can have pro arguments, you can have con arguments, you can have all that stuff in place. The reality is that what you're going to have is the truth. And the truth of the matter is that if you have a decentralized blockchain, you have analytical systems that will go and produce this data. And again, whether it be, you know, chain analysis, whether it be DeFi Llama, whatever it may be, it's going to bring that truth out. It's going to bring that truth out, and that's why it's important that, you know, with blockchains to have their data accessible. And I think that that's where a lot of truth is, it winds up coming from. And that's going to allow, and that does allow institutions to actually go and, you know, get involved and be able to see things. And that's why you have, you know, Fireblocks, they do a lot of things there. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting prospect when Piku Novus aligns with them in the near future. Okay, and I may have misspoke right there, but, you know, these are things that make decentralization just a better prospect within the financial space. All right. In any event, I want to thank you for tuning in, and I'm going to be back with you with another episode of Money Never Sleeps. Until then, I want you guys to have a great trading day.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Velazquez and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.